Welcome to the Social Network Show. How do you feel about social technology and this connected, networked world we live in? Your host of the Social Network Show, Dr. J, interviews informed and entertaining guests to tackle the most pressing digital issues of interest to business professionals and nonprofit leaders, to parents and educators, and to anyone wondering where all this is taking us. And now, your host, experimental psychologist, Dr. Jane Karwoski.
It's early morning and you are riding the commuter train to your workplace. Still a little sleepy, like most of your fellow writers around you, reading from newspapers or tablets, sipping a coffee, or maybe simply dozing a bit. Suddenly, all is thrown into confusion as you try to brace yourself against the urgent slamming on of the brakes. Books, devices, coffee fly everywhere. People are thrown to the floor, crying out in pain. Needless to say, you are late getting into work, and some passengers are days or weeks away from returning to normal due to their injuries. What happened? You eventually hear that a 14-year-old boy with a knack for electronics had converted a TV remote control to hack the signaling system and maneuver all the junctions on the tram lane of your metro area of 1 million people. Cars jumped tracks, collisions followed. Yes, this really happened. In 2008, in the Polish city of Lodz. Are such things possible now? In other countries? You betcha. The magazine Government Technology at govtech.com devotes much space to cybersecurity concerns. It reported on a survey of countries by Trend Micro and the Organization of American States and found that cyber criminals are no longer limited to the cyber world. They are now targeting power grids, water supply systems, and other vital services, threatening life and national and international security. 3/4 of the respondents indicated that the attacks are increasing and increasingly sophisticated, making them tough to detect. Alarmingly, almost 1/3 of the survey respondents said they were unsure if they'd been attacked, and 40% said they had experienced system shutdowns due to attacks. Welcome to the Social Network Show. I'm your host, Jane Karwoski, experimental psychologist, Dr. J. And today you will be hearing from a founder of IAmTheCavalry.org. Josh Corman and others developed this grassroots movement, and it is so exciting, and you'll learn why today. Welcome, Josh, to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm dying to get to the origin of that name, I Am the Cavalry. But first, tell us about you, a little bit about who you are, how life brought you to the project of I Am the Cavalry.
So I'm what you get when you put a philosophy degree in the hacker culture for 15 years. I'm deeply passionate about security that affects the human condition. I think even as an undergrad, I cared about this before I even fell into cybersecurity. But what I saw is that as we became more dependent on digital infrastructure and software, that it was having impact on culture, on society, on many aspects of body, mind, and soul for the human condition. And I want to make sure that the intersection of technology and the human condition is planful and thoughtful, and that we make good trade-off decisions.
Well, that is music to my ears. It's delightful and reassuring to know that there are people like you active in this realm, and especially having the technology knowledge and expertise. Now, you mentioned you were a hacker. Can you explain that term to us?
So I'm not actually self-identifying as a hacker. I'm just drawn to the topic. I see myself much more as a protector or an architect or someone who's coming up with new and scalable ways to defend things. But a hacker is typically looked at as a negative or a pejorative, like a criminal with a ski mask hunched over a laptop in the dark. I like to liken it instead to maybe that hacking is magic. It's just a form of power, and it can be used for good or for ill or lots of points in between. You know, there's evil wizards, but there's also Gandalf trying to save Middle Earth and the Lord of the Rings. So there's a very large and growing group of people who use their hacking powers for good, and we desperately need them now more than ever.
Okay, that explains a lot, because as you say, sometimes it is just viewed as negative, but these are it's a term that can be applied to people who are able to manipulate things in the internet and so forth. So you're approaching cyber safety from a special angle. What is your emphasis?
So a little over 2 years ago, I've been long focused on, I think prior to this, most of my career has been focused on the areas that were emerging and underserved that had the highest consequences to society or to safety or to whatnot. So initially that was the rise of crime, organized crime and hacking. Then it was nation state espionage. Then I took a very strange twist that I think, given your background, you'd like a lot, which was I researched the rise of anonymous and hacktivism, people with very little hacking skill, but the willingness and eagerness to use technology for political or ideological reasons. And then more recently, it turned to, as I saw the rise of the Internet of Things, if software is eating the world, so to speak, as Marc Andreessen says, I see it differently. I see software is infecting the world. It's spreading like a plague. We're putting Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and software into everything in your life. And given what I know about how easy it is to attack digital infrastructure and how difficult it is to defend digital infrastructure, that's a very problematic trend. So the Internet of Everything is the Internet of hackable and exposed things. So a little over 2 years ago, we founded this group at DEF CON, the largest hacker conference in the world, where we had tried to quietly, a couple of the more senior and elder statesmen and whatnot, tried to get as high and deep as we could into the government and into quarters of power to find the adults that would just fix this if we got the right message to the right person. And much to our disappointment, once we did get as high and deep as one can get, we realized there are no adults. And we drank heavily at the bar that night, sadly, but I basically uttered out loud as an emotion. I just said, you know, the cavalry isn't coming. And it wasn't until a few months later that the second half of that sentiment came to me, which was, you know, it's simultaneously depressing and demoralizing to realize that, but it's also empowering. So the phrase, "I am the cavalry," was later revealed at the conference, saying, if they're not coming, it falls to you. So we challenged the group to say, will you be a voice of reason, technical literacy, and be an ambassador, translator, and teammate to public policymakers, the general public, and the affected industries? And our unifying problem statement was that our dependence on connected technology was growing much faster than our ability to secure it, especially in areas affecting public safety and human life. So think hackable automobiles, medical devices, the Internet of Things in your home, and critical infrastructure like your opening example.
Beautiful. The Internet of Things, IoT, is disturbing to me because we're never asked about this. We're never asked, do you want this to be connectable? It's just there in every new product you buy. You can't upgrade or replace without getting into it. And that's disturbing to me.
Yeah, I think we blindly assume that all technology is good. In fact, one of the things I like about Michael Crichton books and movies is he points out the dark side or the trade-off of unbridled technology, whether it's Jurassic Park or other things. You know, it's the whole thing of we never stop to ask whether or not we should. we were more concerned whether or not we could, not whether or not we should. Mm-hmm. And I think we're at that point. One of our security researcher teammates is a diabetic, and he found that an accident, so a glitch in his insulin pump, nearly killed him in his sleep. So he said, geez, if an accident can do this, I wonder what an adversary could do. Mm-hmm. And he found that the Bluetooth stack on the device, which he did not ask for, was done in such a way that without authentication, you could administer a lethal dose.
Oh my gosh.
And this was troubling, of course. And this happened a couple of years before we started. But it's that what we want to do is not the Luddites and cease using technology. We think everything is a cost and a benefit, and everything is a risk and a reward. What we want to do is ensure that connected technologies that can affect public safety are worthy of the trust that we place upon them. We want to render those trade-off decisions more explicit to both manufacturers, regulators, and to you, the consumer, who should just be able to reap the benefits or at least know what risks you're taking on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. This is very encouraging to me because, like you said, being a, and I'm not even sure if it's being able to do something about it, but having some activity to engage in to fight it. When you're mad about something or worried about something, to do nothing is demoralizing, and it's just something that we. I know that I've. Before kind of taking the off, going on the offensive about this, it can become just crushing. It was crushing me to think about all of the emerging technologies, but just taking this one, for example, is, it's empowering, as you said, to just engage in trying to do whatever you can to combat it.
Yeah, we weren't sure it would work, but we knew that we had to try. And much like software programmers, there's this notion of being agile and iterative and try again, much like Edison inventing the light bulb. So what we said is we're going to confidently and empathetically pursue this goal and work with an open hand instead of a pointing finger and focus on future success instead of past failure and really look at this as teaming and educating and elevating the discourse on this as opposed to grandstanding or judging or alternatives that they've experienced from the security community in the past. And it's worked a lot better than we thought. It actually required a whole lot less hacking talent and a whole lot more empathy, ambassador skills, translation, patience, trust building, and mostly just going to where they live and understanding their frame.
So you are not trying to stop these connections with the internet and so forth. You simply want people to be aware of and build in security and privacy, you might say, safeguards.
Yeah, you might use the car analogy before unsafe at any speed and the Pintos blowing up. We just didn't have a culture that realized that you might want to put safety features and safety design and architecture choices into automobiles. I mean, you used to have to buy seatbelts aftermarket. And now, to their credit, over the last 50 years since Unsafe at Any Speed, there's a continuous advance in making cars safer and making their drivers safer in the physical realm. And what we're at a similar inflection point is nobody knew. No one's a villain in their own story. But nonetheless, as soon as they made these cars more connected, they've now opened themselves to all the accidents and adversaries that we've been fighting for the last 25 years in the cybersecurity realm. And it's a battle we're losing. So if part of the blame is on the security community for not making it very, very clear that offense is very, very easy. In other words, attacking is very, very easy and defense is very, very hard. So the risk you incur by connecting your car to the internet are very high. And that dependence is there before the readiness has followed.
Okay, very interesting. And we're only halfway into the show. This is your host, Jane Karwoski. You are hearing from Josh Corman of IamTheCavalry.org. In the second half of today's episode of the Social Network Show, you'll hear more about what changes computer security professionals hope to see as more and more of our life gets connected to the internet.
Questions? Comments? Reach out to us. Our email address is questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com or find us on Twitter @SocialNetShow.
I was visiting my elderly aunt and her phone rang.
Oh, it's you again? But I already have life insurance.
The caller was doing a great job keeping my aunt on the line.
My credit card number? Hold on.
Well, when I picked up the phone and said hello, the caller hung up.
McGruff the Crime Dog here. Recognizing fraud can be difficult for older people. The National Crime Prevention Council wants you to know how to spot a scam and report it to local law enforcement agencies.
Learn more at ncpc.org. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the U.S. Department of Justice.
You're listening to The Social Network Show. I'm your host, Dr. J, and you're hearing from Josh Corman of IamTheCavalry.org. We're talking about how safety concerns have been given short shrift in many of the connected devices that we are encountering these days. Josh, you mentioned some of the things about the automobile industry, that being a connected device anymore, a traveling computer, if you will. What steps have you taken in that field that you are also hoping to apply to the other, the medical devices, the smart home, and the public infrastructure?
Sure. So we have four major projects, and we slice them up by cohorts, so to speak, or people that clustered together nicely. So we have an automotive project because it has different regulators, different manufacturers, different timelines and dynamics in that multi-stakeholder ecosystem. We have a medical device project. We have a smart home and personal IoT or Internet of Things project for smaller consumer devices. And we also have a public infrastructure project, which is pretty vast, including planes, trains, hydroelectric dams, power plants, the really big stuff. And that one is really challenging with really high consequences of failure. But to start with, right. On our first birthday at DEF CON, a little over a year ago, August last year, we wrote an open letter through Reuters to the automotive CEOs. And we essentially said that now that a car is a computer on wheels, that you're masters of your domain and have been improving safety over the last 50 years. We're masters of our domain in cybersecurity. And now that our domains have collided, we will have safer outcomes sooner if we work together. And as a vehicle for that, we published a 5-star cyber safety framework, outlining a framework of how we could collaborate on being ready for failures in these software and connected technology systems.
Well, because failures are inevitable, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, an engineering principle that we can harmonize on is that all systems fail, and they have very rigorous safety discipline within the physical realm where they validate intended use and they go through lots of crash testing. They just lack the experience and the domain expertise for these new accidents and adversaries introduced through unintended use and misuse or abuse of these technology packages they're adding to vehicles. So the way we structured the 5-star was, if all systems fail, here's 5 postures towards failure. And on the website, you can see the real names. But the way I describe it to my neighbor is, if all systems fail, number one, tell your customers how you seek to avoid failure. Number two, tell willing researchers that you will not sue them if they try to help you avoid failure. Number three, how do you capture and learn from failure? Think like a black box you might have on an airplane. Number four, how do you have a prompt and agile response to failure? And number five, how do you contain and isolate failure? So the first one is really kind of like Microsoft does, where you're describing how you do your security program. The second one, also like Microsoft, says we will not sue third-party researchers who follow our submission process. So it's a welcome mat instead of a beware of dog sign, inviting help to be safer sooner. The third one is really they were simultaneously complaining that there was no evidence of hacking when they lack any evidence capture capabilities in any of the vehicles to prove otherwise. So that circular logic gets broken if we add some sort of black box of sorts. The fourth is much like your iPhone or your Windows update, where, you know, we have to update these things sometimes. And do you have the ability to do that in a prompt and agile and comprehensive way? Instead of like you saw with the Jeep, where they had to send out USB keys, it's going to take months, and more than half of those cars will never be fixed, including, much to my chagrin, I found out the rental car agency I rented from never intends to do those patches because they flipped the car eventually. So the idea of having a robust update mechanism like Tesla and BMW have over the air. And number five was really, can you separate critical systems from non-critical systems? So in the case of the Jeep hack, who cares if the radio is hacked if it can't disable the brakes or turn the steering wheel? But unfortunately, most vehicles, once you're on the network or the CAN bus, you have unfettered access to everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is sobering. It is awe-inspiring to think about what can be done by those who want to cause harm. But you mentioned not suing people who try to help. Is that because someone may try to infiltrate a system to find out if they can, so that they can help correct the problems?
Well, without getting into all of this, and Paul Rosenzweig may have touched on this on your prior episode, he and I do a lot of collaboration on this front, but there are two really problematic laws that have a chilling effect on white hat researchers trying to do the right thing, even to your own vehicle, by the way. So one of them is the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, or CFAA, and that discourages, it was written before the internet was really booming, originally drafted in 1984. So it's really out of date for definitions of things like authorized access and whatnot. So that carries federal crime penalties and civil suit. So it's really a double whammy. And then there's also the Digital Millennium Copyright Act under Clinton era, which was meant to protect intellectual property, but it has the effect of making it very problematic if you research any firmware out of your car or other things. So those two naturally discourage this, but Microsoft overcame this many years ago through their Blue Hat program, where they invited researchers. They have a publicly stated policy saying, we will not sue you if you follow these guidelines, and we want your help. In fact, they're at the point in their maturity where they give a six-figure cash reward for certain classes of findings, and their products become safer and their customers become safer through this highly enlightened collaboration. But just like the Kubler-Ross, you know, stages of grief, typically the reaction to a well-meaning researcher is usually lawyers, gag orders, fear, trepidation, and combat. It's your fight or flight instinct. And what we really want to do is, it took Microsoft about 15 years between sending cease and desist letters and then giving a cash prize. So that mean time to enlightenment was really long. And now that we have vulnerable, exposed automobiles, medical devices, and critical infrastructure, we want to compress that mean time to enlightenment to maybe 3 years for these newer players, so that we, especially because the consequences of failure are so much more severe.
Well, what can the public, such as my listeners, do to promote your work of protecting human life and public safety and these things you've been talking to us about?
Well, there's a couple ways. One is stop assuming that all connected things are good things. The Internet of Things, I did a TEDx comparing this to swimming with sharks. I think my boss at the time, we were about to do a shark dive, and he said, what kind of an idiot gets in the water with an apex predator? And, you know, it was a fair point. And I realized after the shark dive, when I walked to my brand new vehicle, that the same was true for the Internet of Things. We're taking unhackable vehicles, and we're making them hackable vehicles, and we too have apex predators. So, you know, the Internet of Things is a tsunami or a sea of technology, and we haven't really considered that. So one thing you can do is be more conscious, and don't blindly assume that just because it's connected means it's better. In fact, it may be very, very bad for your privacy and safety. The second thing is the cavalry isn't a bunch of security researchers. We're very mixed crew, so there may be skills or experience that you can bring. In fact, it turns out our killer app isn't hacking. Our killer app is empathy and ambassador skills. And some of the people that are the best researchers in the world are terrible at building trust with, say, the Food and Drug Administration or with GM and Ford. So you can directly participate in this open grassroots thing, and we're gaining steam all the time. There's a significant amount of learning curve to learn how to talk to Congress, for example. But people that are listening to your show may have tremendous experience there and might be able to contribute directly. I am the cavalry, it's not Josh. It's a statement that you, Dr. J, that you would make and do your part to whatever level you can. And if you're just a consumer that wants to make sure that you get trustworthy devices, one can start asking for one or more of these five ready postures towards failure. We made it in such a way where it could become buyer criteria. It could become a consumer reports lens. It could be much like the five-star crash rating system you see for cars. And perhaps, I know there's a hospital that is going to stop buying medical technology that can't support an autopsy from a digital perspective. So they're really keen on seeing star number three because they want to be able to capture and learn from failure. So it can start affecting the economics of this space as well.
An autopsy of the device. You mean?
Well, when someone dies, they do a morbidity and mortality, and they look at all the different discernible details from the autopsy. But what they realize now is that medical devices play a key role in the patient's care or in the patient's body, and they need to contribute as well. They're essentially opaque and a black box right now as to did they or didn't they contribute to the negative outcome.
Okay. And so, speaking of body, I know that you have referred to body, mind, and soul elements of, I don't know if that's computer security, but tell me about that.
So when we launched, we said that we were deeply concerned about the relationship between technology and the human condition on three areas, body, mind, and soul. And the way we were defining it was body was public safety and human life. Mind was, as a research community, we saw an increased criminalization of our profession. And many of us were doing this for public good and public safety. So that was a very concerning issue with things like DMCA and CFAA that I referred to earlier. And soul was really came out of my research into Anonymous and activism, which was, and now post Snowden, this recognition that civil liberties and rights globally are coming into conflict with technology. And technology seems to be winning. And that was the original plea. And we've had several sister organizations spawned out. What we realized very quickly is majoring on safety alone was tremendous scope. So we have members of our group helping on all three to varying levels of detail, but we really wanted to focus and hone in on cyber safety. There's several digital privacy advocacy groups and think tanks. There's almost no one focused on the life aspect. And we make a sort of a joke, but it's sort of incisive as well, which is we love our privacy. We'd like to be alive to enjoy it. And too often when we encountered these industries, we saw that they were defining security as privacy, almost one-to-one.
Mm-hmm.
And since these industries are 100 plus years old each, they also hear safety, the very same word we're using, as validation of intended use. Like a scalpel is safe if it can be used properly by a surgeon, and they never factor misuse or abuse cases in all hacking is repurposing or misuse or abuse. So there's a blind spot halfway between their assumption that security equals privacy and their traditional models of safety. So we've really majored in body for the last 2 years and had significant progress with the automotive industry through this 5-star. You're seeing people like Tesla have a coordinated disclosure policy to work with researchers. You're seeing more companies pledge to add over-the-air updates in a secure manner. And then we're also having significant progress with the Food and Drug Administration. In fact, right before DEF CON, our second birthday, they issued their first ever sort of recall on a medical device for a cybersecurity reason. Essentially, they concluded that we don't need to wait for proof of harm, especially when there's no logging to ever prove the harm. What they acted on was a Hospira drug infusion pump that had an unmitigated pathway to harm. And the fact that it could be remotely exploited and there was no way to fix it, they encouraged hospitals to cease using it. So if our mission was to save lives through security research and our mission was to make safer outcomes sooner, we believe our collaboration and our empathy and ambassador skills helped that happen. On that front, because now security issues are taken much, much more seriously by the manufacturers than they previously had been, because they can understand that the unmitigated pathway to harm could represent threat to life and limb.
Okay, that's awesome. What a great story on which to end. Where can you tell us how our listeners can get in touch with you or see what they can do to contribute to this?
Sure. We're on Twitter at I Am The Cavalry. Our website is imthecavalry.org. And we communicate through a bunch of different mechanisms, but that's the best place to start is on the website.
Okay.
And just so your listeners find it correctly, it's not Calvary. That's where they killed Jesus of Nazareth. It's Cavalry. So while we love the empowering personal attestation and commitment of the name, we also can't stand the name collision or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we are the horses. But it's a really critical moment in history where our dependence has exceeded our ability to defend. And I haven't lost hope. I just know there's a lot of work to do, and it's going to take a long time to right this ship. But we can do it together. We can be safer sooner together.
Okay. Thank you so much, Josh Corman of IamTheCavalry.org. And thank you for being with us for this edition of the Social Network Show. I'd love to hear from you, so please get in touch with us through questions at thesocialnetworkshow.com. Every player for this show on our website has more episodes at the top. And so if you click on that, you can easily browse for past shows you might have missed. You can follow us on Twitter at @SocialNetShow, and I am at @SocialNetShow2, the number 2, as well as hear the show on our website, thesocialnetworkstation.com, Rabbit TV Plus, TuneIn, Audio Boom, iTunes, wherever you can access your podcasts, and please add us to your playlist or favorites. Please have fun and be safe online and off until we welcome you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the worldwide show dedicated to social media networking and understanding the connected, networked world we live in. Listen to our archive shows on thesocialnetworkshow.com and follow us on Twitter at @SocialNetShow. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia Incorporated. The views and opinions expressed are those of our host and guest and may not be the views and opinions of Social Network Intermedia.